session number 22621, Rule 1.
Where were you born, please?
In Hull.
Which year was this?
1918.
Did both your mother and father come from Hull?
Yes. My father originally came from Kent. His family moved up to Hull.
What did he do for a living?
He was a shipyard worker.
And did you grow up and have your schooling in Hull?
Yes.
Where did you live in Hull?
Down Dunsham Lane.
And your school?
St Mary's, Wilton Street. It was a Roman Catholic school, but it was handy. We weren't Roman Catholics, but they allowed us to go there.
And what was life like in Hull pre-war?
Well, my recollections are it was very happy from my point of view.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you get a job?
Yes, straight away. I only had next door to go to work. Kingston Engineering Company.
So that would have been in 32?
I left school at Christmas 32 and started work in January 33.
Is that the job you were doing when war broke out?
In the final year of my apprenticeship, yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Not exactly, because at the time I was cleaning the car where we garaged it at my sister's. Who lived down Lee Street, and she came and told me they'd just declared war on Germany. Oh, I said, oh yes, well I'm too busy now to take notice, I'm cleaning the car.
Didn't it shake you in any way?
Well no, we'd been expecting it, hadn't we, in the 30s. Every newsreel at the cinema showed the Germans marching and everything. It frightened me a little bit, I thought. Good Lord, I'm not going to have to fight this lot, am I?
Did the war affect you at first?
Not at first. No, soon I took to the army like a duck takes to water, really. My older brother was in the Guards. He had been in the Guards, the Coldstream Guards.
When was it that you actually went into the army?
I was called up, to be exact, on the 19th of October, 1939.
What was your reaction to that?
Well, I accepted it, really. My parents, my mother in particular, my younger brother, were more upset than I was.
Can you remember your first journey to go and find the army?
I can indeed, because I'd never been further than Harrogate, Scarborough and Rotherham until that point, and they sent me to Glasgow. I had to change at Leeds, and I travelled with a chap from the Corps who used to come round every week and take my mother's grocery order. And he got called up on the same day to the same venue, and I travelled with him.
What were you told to take?
Well, I took and pyjamas.
What happened on arrival in Glasgow?
Well, we went to a hall. Is there Hilled in Glasgow? We
yes.
Went to that big hall there, and it was absolutely full of chaps from all over the country who had been called up. I should think there'd be at least 1,000. And there's no sleep that night at all. They're all jumping about and, you know. And, of course, in the morning, they started calling our names out. And we all went to the point in the hall where they directed us, you see. And there was a sergeant from the 64th anti-tank there collecting us.
And then?
We got on a sort of a minibus. It wasn't a proper minibus like we know them today. It was a small bus. There were 33 of us in the intake, and there was only 3 of us from Yorkshire. The others were Geordies, Newcastleites, and he took us to Jedburgh, to Ferniehirst Castle. And that's how my career started in the army.
What happened there?
Well, not a lot really. Most we could do was route marches. because we hadn't any equipment at all. And there were 7 rifles in the battery, which were used for guard duties, and nothing else. We hadn't any guns.
What was the full name of the unit which you had now joined?
Well, the Territorial Army name was the Queen's Own Royal Glasgow Yeomanry.
And the number?
256 Battery, 64th Anti-Tank Regiment.
So this was Royal Artillery?
Royal Artillery.
So it was called the Queen's Own Royal Glasgow Yeomanry?
Yes. But they never used the name. It was on the 64th Anti-Tank.
Had you any idea about the nature of the unit which you were now in?
No, but some of the lads, the terriers soon told us, and they took some delight in saying, "No, you are in the suicide squad."
Why did they reckon that?
Well, because our expectation of life, once we got into action, was about 12 minutes.
What did that do for your morale?
Didn't do anything at all.
Did you ignore that? Or
yes. Well, there's always people like that.
So you are now at Jedburgh?
Jedburgh, Roxburghshire, in the border country.
Any stories about what happened to you there?
We had a church parade, and ours, Church of England, of course, and they all went to the local Presbyterian church. And when I'd finished the service and come out, walking back to the castle, Ferniers Castle it was, I saw the lads marching along with the captain marching proudly along in front. So I stood until they got past and I joined in at the back. Then I got into trouble for that, for not saluting him and asking permission to join the parade.
Were you punished for it?
No. Well, no, rookie. Couldn't do much.
What are your next recollections?
Well, we didn't get our battle dress for several weeks, and that's the one I'm wearing on that younger-looking picture I showed you. I got a particularly good side at, you know, and everybody was envious because theirs were not so good as mine. So I left it on my blankets one day, and when I came back, it had gone. Somebody had pinched it. And as a result, when Christmas leave came along, I didn't have a hat to wear, you see. And
was there much thieving?
Well, we were told to wear hats on all occasions when we went out, so I had to go and leave with my steel helmet on. Which was very fortunate, really, because when we got on the train, we went to another station to change trains, had my kit bag. I stepped off the train and I put my feet on a sheet of ice which shot up in the air, and I landed on my head. Which, fortunately, if I'd had my side hat on, I might have injured myself badly. So it was very fortuitous that I, you know, they did me a good turn, whoever pinched me out.
Did you soon get into proper training?
Well, in that, they'd had no training themselves, the Territorial Army. It was, in fact, a little bit of a shambles. And we did some rifle drill and a route march every day, but there wasn't much else we could do, because no equipment. We only had one 1500 weight truck, and there was only two of us, myself and a lad from Doncaster, who had driving licences. So we got cracking with the driving, but it was an ancient army truck. And I couldn't handle it very well, so I didn't get much driving. It was one of those trucks with an autoback. It didn't have a petrol pump or anything. You maybe never heard of them. Work on a suction, thing, you know, the bad to start.
And then?
Well, I think it was pretty well mundane there. We didn't stay there long. After the Christmas leave, we moved to another place near Glasgow. What was the name of it? It sounded like a foreign place. Right on the tip of my tongue, but it's just remembering it.
Might come back to you later.
Yes.
What happened to you there?
Well, just the same sort of thing, really. Marching drill, you know, rifle drill. Although we didn't have enough rifles to go around, we used to have to take it in turns. And if we wanted to do any gun drill, we had to make up a mock gun. You know, we didn't have any guns. We didn't get any guns for 2 years.
Did you say it was disorganized?
Well, not exactly, but territorials, they hadn't had any proper training, any of them, really. And they had their own form. I mean, shortly we got some reservists who had been called up. That's when things changed.
In what way?
Well, drills and everything, you know. And they'd been in the army. Some of the chaps we got had done service in India. And they were real, you know, real soldiers, you could say.
Did you learn much from them?
I wouldn't say I did particularly. I mean, from that place I went on a course for nearly 6 months.
What course was that?
Well, I went to Spennymoor, County Durham, and there was four or five of us from the regiment went, and I was pleased because the weather was atrocious then. It was deep snow, and we had to break ice in a stream outside the schoolroom billets where we billeted.
Play what?
A stream in the billet where we, in the schoolroom. And I shaved as best I could, but ice cold water, and the whiskers wouldn't come off. And the major put me on a charge. He said, "You didn't shave this morning."
What were you supposed to be learning there?
Well, I don't know. I don't really know. We were just putting our time in, that's all. We didn't learn a thing, but do you mean on the course?
Yes.
Oh, well, they came to me and woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning when we were billeted in the schoolroom. And they said, "Get ready, you're going on the course. Be ready in half an hour." So I never had any more on the charge for not shaving, but we went to Spennymoor and I was in civilian billets, and it was like home from home.
What was the title of the course?
Well, it was a fitting course. It was a place for unemployed miners who'd been made redundant and lost their jobs. And it was training them how to do engineering work. So they put me on that course. And we had exercises to do with different metal pieces.
You mean you were training civilians to be engineers?
No. The civilians were training us. Supposed to be. But, of course, most of us who went on the course had been engineering workers themselves or apprentices. One chap who'd from Glasgow, he'd been on railway maintenance, you know, on the railways. And my friend from Gainsborough, Dougie Woodhead, he'd been a motor mechanic, similar to what I was, and in Doncaster.
So could these civilian engineers teach you very much that you did not already know?
So far as I'm concerned, no. Because one of the exercises they had to do, I don't know, you won't have heard of it, I shouldn't think. It's a block of steel about 2 inches thick and 3 inches wide and long, and you had to cut a hexagon right through it, and then fit get a raw piece of steel and file that so as it fits. It had to fit all ways from both directions. It hadn't got to fall through, and actually man was a seven-day wonder. And it's supposed to be on display in a museum in Spennymoor or somewhere. My son keeps telling me he'll take me down to see if I can see it.
You mean it was a work of art?
I think it was. I say it myself. Because this one of the younger instructor, he'd had a trainee, one of the ex-miners, who was pretty good, and he'd made a steam engine, you know, with a sliding valve and everything. But he was stuck with the sliding valve because he hadn't been able to get hold of anybody who could make him one. So he gave me the job and I did it for him. Needless to say, I came out of there with good marks. That was just one of the first courses I went on. With being engineering, it's all to do with guns, gun maintenance, because that's how I became the staff sergeant in the end, to my job to look after the guns and keep them in good working order.
And after the course at Spennymoor, what happened then?
Well, we went back to the unit when we'd finished the course. But by that time, the unit had moved down south somewhere. We were constantly moving all over the place. We didn't stay very long anywhere.
Were you in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Oh, yes. This would be 1941, I think, and again in London at King's Cross.
Can you describe what you experienced of the bombing?
Well, we were in a sort of a naffy canteen in Lowestoft, was it, did I say?
You said King's Cross, did you?
Oh, King's Cross was the second occasion. Yeah. I went into the canteen there and it was midday. And it was quite foggy, actually. And while I was in there, waiting to order a meal, this bombing started. So I looked around and thought, where do they all disperse themselves? Did they make for the shelter or what? And nobody moved. The ladies behind the counter just continued serving the customers and everybody else sat there and eating the meal, so nobody bothered. We just carried on. Well, I don't know how they could see the bomb because of the fog, you see.
And the other time when you were in bombing?
Well, we were in a naffy place. I mean, we were always after something to eat because we didn't get overfed in the army. And Felixstowe, that was the place, Felixstowe. And a raid took place there. And I remember one occasion we were just going out and a bomb dropped nearby. And the door swung open and we all walked out. Then it shook behind us with the blast, you see. And one lad said, oh, thanks for that. It saved us opening the door.
So what was people's morale like under the bombing?
Well, Felixstowe was, we were billeted in civilian houses, but the civilians had left. And it was taken over by the army, you see. We were right at the outskirts of Felixstowe, and we just did our usual PT and everything. It was there that we got some guns. But the first guns we got were First World War 18-pounders and French 75s.
What did you think to these two types of artillery piece?
Well, they weren't much good. We never fired them. We used them for gun drill. And also, along the beach there were pillboxes. And in each pillbox, there was an old naval 6-pounder gun. And they told us that it's to be hoped you never fire them because they'll do more harm to you than they will to the enemy. They were funny little, not much bigger than a mortar. Short-range thing. And very short-barrelled. But they're guns.
So what job were you given on the guns at this time?
Well, on this first course I went on, I'd already been mustered as a tradesman, you see. But I also did driving. At this stage, I got a motorbike, but I think that was later on. No, it wasn't. I got the motorbike earlier because we moved down to near Epping, Essex, and we used to watch the Germans come at the Battle of Britain Town, and we used to watch these bombers coming across in squadrons, bombing the aerodrome, and we were at a place called Stapleford Tony in Essex, and it was about a couple of miles away from North Weald, and it was an emergency landing ground. There's a squadron of fighter planes there, and we used to watch the pilots scrambling when the klaxon went.
Did you get the impression that Britain was winning the Battle of Britain at that time?
Well, we never thought we were losing it. Not as early does then.
Did you see any aircraft come down?
No, not there, I didn't. We saw them come back. And because shortly afterwards, they put me in a troop and they moved us to a bomber station, Stradisall, not far away from Bury St Edmunds. And of course they put us in tents right at the end of the runway.
What did you do at Stradisall?
Well, we were supposed to be guarding the aerodrome. It was in the days before they formed the RAF regiment. So we went there as aerodrome guards.
And then? What do you remember next?
Well, there's two of us. We used to drive. And we had a Bedford truck then, and we used to take the leavemen into Bury St Edmunds. Is that the place? Romford. No, it was Romford we used to take them into, and we used to see who could get there and back fastest. And whoever took them in the morning, somebody else brought them back in the afternoon, you see. So we did it in turns.
From Stradishaw? Or Felix?
No, that was from Stapleford Tony in Essex. That's it, to Romford. Have you got that? Have I made a muck of it?
No, that's alright.
And so it went on until, I think we were there until after the Battle of Britain. We did see a tragic sight one day, though, later on at Stradisall. Am I going on?
Yes.
There's a Wellington bomber taking off right across at an angle at the aerodrome, and the pilot seemed to be having trouble lifting his starboard wing, and he was heading straight for the hangars, and his wing hit the corner of the hangar, and of course the plane come down and crashed onto the concrete, and it burst into flames, and everybody was doing the darndest to get the crew out, but they couldn't. They were hitting it with axes and they couldn't. They all died, they all burnt out. Awful. We'd been down there at some butts firing Lewis machine guns, for practice. And there we had some unmade armoured cars. They were ordinary lorries with concrete sides, and they must have weighed tons. And I used to drive one. The engine wasn't strong enough to pull it along the runway.
Did these unsatisfactory guns get replaced whilst you were in England?
Oh, they did eventually, yes. The first anti-tank guns we got were 2-pounders, which were about as effective as pea shooters. And then they had 360-degree turn. There was a seat you could sit on and turn the traverse wheel, and it'd go round and round and round like a roundabout, and the lads used to play with them like that. But they were useless as anti-tank guns. And we kept them as long as, until we got 6-pounders, and they were a lot better.
Did you get the 6-pounders in England?
Yes, in England, yeah.
Can you tell me about the 6-pounders?
Pardon?
Can you tell me about the 6-pounders that
were? Yes, well, I think I mentioned on the phone when you first rang me. I used to look at the guns every day and make sure they're kept clean and everything. And one of the officers was there looking round it one day because they'd been having trouble with these guns. We used to take them down on the range to fire them. And I don't know whether you know anything about gun drill. number three put the round in the gun and tapped the layer gun there on the shoulder, then he'd fire. But it was a firing lever. And he had something under his arm, a pad under his arm to keep the gun on target. But of course, when you pull the lever to fire the gun, it pulled it off target and it used to miss. Because this officer came along and looking at it and he said, "It's a pity you can't fit it with the trigger." Well, I said, "Well, I've got it." So I took this firing lever off and I made, using the same bolt holes, a piece of 2-inch tube flattened at one end with holes drilled in to fasten it in. And I used another bolt hole to make a flat piece of inch by quarter mile steel, and I shaped it like a trigger, and I got a Bowden cable and fastened it up to the firing mechanism on the breech, and all you had to do then to fire it had to squeeze the lever, and it didn't pull the gun off target at all. So I made a drawing of that, and the RSM come and collected it to send it off to wherever the war office, I should think. And that was it for the time being. And a few weeks later, battery sergeant major came along and he said, "There's some triggers to fit to the guns." When I looked at them, they were made of 8th steel. I just got one and bent it. I said, "I'm not fitting these to my gun." And there's a mill stream outside, and I just went outside and threw them in. By this time, we were in Clackmannanshire in Scotland.
What did he say to that when you threw it away?
He didn't say anything. I said, "I've got some better material than that." It was all scrap metal I used, and I made some stronger ones. The ones that lasted 5 minutes.
And this was the official trigger?
Well, the lever was. That's how the guns were turned out. I don't know, nobody put much thought into it, because, I mean, if it had a traversing wheel, like the elevating wheel, you could elevate the wheel and it stayed, but it didn't. They had to swing it round like that, you see. But if it had a wheel, it would have held it and it wouldn't have mattered, the lever. But holding it under a shoulder pad when you pull, you know, like that, it was useless.
Did you get any kind of commendation for your improvisation?
No, nothing at all. My friend Dougie Woodhead from Gainsbury told me only just a few years ago, he said, "You know, RSM Streeter got an MM for your invention." And I think the officer did all right out of it, who mentioned the idea to me. Because he left shortly and went to a training regiment. I wasn't looking for anything during the day's work. The RSM said, "You'll get an award for this or something," but I never did.
Which year do you think that might have been?
1942.
Would it be in the winter or the summer?
During the summer months. Because that's the year we went abroad to North Africa. In December. But we spent the summer at a place in County Durham called Towlow. It was a mining village. And we were there for nearly 6 months from... Well, I was posted there. I was in the 256 battery originally, but when I was promoted, they sent me to the 254 battery. And I stayed with the 254 battery for the rest of the war.
Was there much difference between the two batteries?
Well, it was a rougher battery.
How do you mean?
Well, the 256 battery I had been in, there were a lot of them were university students and come from a better area in Glasgow. But the 254 was come from a rough area. And the story went round that the lads had been chasing the major round with bayonets round a balcony in the village where they were billeted. Of course, I didn't see that major. He went, they got a hard-line one who soon sorted things out, you know. And there was all sorts of queer things went on.
Such as?
Well, when it was winter time, when I was posted to this battery, January 1942, and it was deep snow, and I was walking along the street at one side, and this new major that got only a little bloke, and I didn't see him. It was night time, it was dark and it was snowing, and I heard this voice, "Hey, you, across the road." I said, "Yeah, me?" "Yes. Don't you salute officers when you see them?" And I couldn't see who it was. And, you know, when I went to the billet, the first thing they told me there, there was one of these chaps in it who was excused duties because he had bad feet and he couldn't do any parades at all or anything. So somebody said to me, "You'd better give him half a crown to look after your kit or else you'll lose it all." So I did. I gave him half a crown a week to look after my kit.
Was it a wise precaution?
I think it was, because there was a poor